Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will go across the pond to preview the Open Championship with Steve Sands. We'll also talk about the All-Star Game with Jeff Passan. But first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
He retired with a record of 31-1.
That was it.
That was it. Because you say to yourself, well, what am I doing?
Right.
I can't, because I'm doing that again. Because I can't fight this guy again. what am I doing in here?
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, that's...
Oh, by the way, also Anders Järrett. Remember him?
Tennis player.
Yes.
He wasn't much. Swedish tennis player.
Swedish tennis player.
He was okay. No,
I never really won anything. I just love the name.
He wasn't
Anders
like
Järrett.
The other Swedish tennis player.
No, he wasn't Edberg and Wielander and those guys.
How about Borg? Borg? Because if you're not Borg, get off the list. Get out of the show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
So I got this email overnight, and I need to read it because it shows you how completely out of touch I am with the world. This is from Jim Gentile, not that Jim Gentile. People who are my age remember Jim Gentile as a baseball player, first baseman, I believe.
Yes, I think you're
right. Different Jim Gentile. This is in Brooklyn. Says, Jim Gentile here to follow up on your most recent tirade about major sporting events being shifted to streaming services for telecast. This would be the Home Run Derby going to Netflix.
Which actually worked for...
Okay, but what are you doing, is my position. He writes, I thought you would be interested to know the following. According to the Pew Research Center, 83% of Americans subscribe to one or more streaming services, while only 36% have cable subscriptions. 83%. Now, I subscribe to one or more streaming services. I do. I just don't know how to use them. But only 36% have just cable. Breaking those down, this is further. Breaking down those numbers further, only 8% have cable and no streaming. Only 8%, while 55% have streaming and no cable. That's the Wilbon position.
Yes.
Bring Derek in, streaming and no cable. In terms of actual viewership levels, according to AdWave, total viewership of streaming services exceeds the total viewership of cable and old-fashioned over-the-air access combined. I don't have numbers specific to Americans 40 and under, but can only presume that the skew towards streaming is even more pronounced there.
Oh, sure.
Perhaps significantly so. You often say correctly that sporting events are TV shows. Part of the business of putting on TV shows is to place them so as to maximize viewership. That is why sports are being placed on Netflix and other streaming platforms. This appears irrefutable by me. I don't know what I'm supposed to say to it.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, I would say you're missing the point a little bit, that it's about the experience, where, again, there's certain sporting events, like the Sunday afternoon, where you're going back and forth from baseball,
yes,
football,
and you want to do that.
Golf, and you want to be able to go back,
yes,
and forth.
Yes, you want to be able to do that. When you're on those platforms, you can't
now,
do that.
Now, when you think about it, if you're the streaming service and you see how many people leave, even if it's for just a couple months, maybe by having more of these sporting events, you keep them as year-round subscribers.
There's a larger question here. Where's the red zone going to be?
I
don't get the red zone at the moment on Comcast. It is closed out to me. They say this station is unavailable. Same with NFL Network.
Yeah, the music.
So where am I going to get the red zone from? Because I'm going to that. Going to that. If that is on a streaming service where I have to climb a mountain to get it, I'm going to that. Just so we know.
Climb every mountain.
Ford every stream. Okay. Little inside baseball yesterday on the PTI program. We were put in a position yesterday. We are in the exact same position today. The lead story of our show will be the end of the soccer game, if the soccer game ends on time or in time to get on our show.
Full time?
Yesterday, Spain beat France 2-0 in regulation time.
That's right.
It was over by 5 o'clock. Frank and I were able to do the show in a normal manner. But if it is tied at the end of regulation and it goes to the overtime periods, which I believe are like 20 minutes or 30 minutes, whatever that, and it's not sudden death.
No.
This ain't the NHL.
No, they play it out.
You play the whole thing out. Everybody gets
15,
a chance.
15 for you.
Then, 30, it's a total of 30 minutes?
Correct.
And I'm sure there's a hydration break, the silliest thing in all of sports. Hydration break.
They switch ends, too.
Yeah, but if that's going to happen, then we are unlikely to be able to start PTI with a soccer result, and so we will do something else.
How nervous were you before that second goal?
I mean, I was sort of resigned to the fact that something stupid was going to happen. We were going to have to do the show in a manner that I didn't want. But then I was very, the second goal made me very happy, and I was talking with Kelleher. And a two-goal lead that late is rarely overcome.
Yes.
And plus, Spain's good.
Yes, Spain is very good.
You know, France is very good.
Yeah.
But Spain is very good. I mean, this is not France against,
the
borough of Staten Island. It's not. You know, I mean, they were good. So that's what happened. I thought Spain got a third goal, but they waved it off. I didn't understand what happened. Everybody goes, it's offside. I don't know offsides in soccer. I don't really understand it. That's why Frank is on the show.
Yeah, Frank knows
because
soccer.
Frank understands soccer.
Yes.
This is very important for me. But do you know what I found out yesterday? Kelleher told me this before the show started, sufficiently before, so I would have it in my notes, that going into this game, Spain had beaten France 8 out of 10 times.
Oh, wow.
So now it's 9 out of 11. They own France.
Yeah, apparently they do. Yeah.
I mean, they may not own anybody else. I don't know. I don't care either. When this is done, this is lovely.
How meaningful is that if it's not with the same players?
You know, when it's done and you have the next one, God bless.
Do we know where the next World Cup is?
It's in three countries again.
Okay.
I think this seems to be what they like to do, to go to
spread
three countries. But I don't know where.
They get more bribes that way.
I don't know where. Let me get to the All-Star game. What a terrible two evenings in a row for Philadelphia fans. It's just awful. This makes Wilbon so happy. Wilbon cannot start any conversation about sports in Philadelphia without saying, I hate Philadelphia. So he says it all the time.
It looked hot there last night.
He knows it bothers me because Michael went to school in Philadelphia. And I like Philadelphia. I do. I like Philadelphia. You grow up in New York, you like Boston, you like Philadelphia, you like Washington.
So,
Baltimore. You like them. Wilbon has a deep and abiding resentment for anything on I-95 because he knows in his heart that it makes Chicago the second city, which is what Chicago called itself for, 100 years.
Yeah.
The second city. It ain't the first city.
No.
Okay? So he's so happy that Philadelphia fans watched Schwarber play great in the Home Run Derby. Great. Just great.
Yeah.
Get to the finals, post a number.
Had every expectation he should have won that.
And then Jordan Walker hit 6 home runs in a row in sudden death.
Basically. Down to the last ball? Okay.
Yeah. Hit 6 in a row, and he won. And if he needed 8, he'd have hit 8.
Yeah.
He hit what he needed to hit, and he walked off. Philadelphia fans left the ballpark. Is it still the Vet, or is it the Link?
Citizens Bank.
It's the Vet. It's not the Vet.
I said it's Citizens Bank.
Citizens Bank, right. It used to be the Vet.
It used to be the Vet, the old Vet.
I don't know. Well, one of them, the football or the basketball or the baseball, they're all together.
It's not the Palestra?
It's not the Palestra. I know the Palestra's in town. These things are down on the highway. Yeah.
They've done a beautiful reno at the Palestra.
Yeah. Oh, they have?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So they left. They were angry because their boy got beat. Not only did their boy get beat, their number one boy, Bryce Harper, didn't make it. Didn't get to the finals. Didn't get to the second round.
No.
Then they come in to the All-Star game, and it's the correct place to be. It's where the Declaration of Independence was signed. It's the right place to be on the 250th anniversary of the United States of America. It is. It's the right place. And they got their best pitcher out there. Maybe you would argue that their best pitcher is actually Lowry, right?
Mm.
Maybe you'd argue that because he's 10-1 and he's got a better record and he's got a better ERA than Sanchez. But he's not available because he told baseball to shove it. He wasn't going to go and pitch. You know, back off, baseball. And he left. And they put in Sanchez, who I believe deservedly started that game. Because earlier in the year, he had a streak of 50 2/3 consecutive innings without giving up an earned run. It's great.
It's phenomenal.
It's like third all time. It's wonderful. And he gets up there, and he got the first out, and he was sweating profusely. I have no idea how hot it was in Philadelphia yesterday, but he was drenched. He walked at least 2 batters, gave up key singles to Cody Bellinger for 2 runs and Ben Rice, Yankee teammates.
Started an Alvarez single.
So he gave up 3 singles.
The exact same single.
Right up the middle.
Yeah.
And nobody on the National League deployed their defensive players right up the middle. Didn't do that. 3 singles and 2 walks. And it's 3-0. It's 3-0 with two out. And I'm sitting watching the game with my son. And the boys had gone to bed. Walker hadn't gone
back
to bed.
They snuck back downstairs. Okay. So you have to trick the littlest one that the big boys are going to bed. But they go right back downstairs to watch baseball.
So it's 3-0, and Sanchez isn't out of the inning yet, and there's activity in the bullpen, and we both say to each other, you're not going to take the guy out. It's too, you can't do that. It's too embarrassing.
Home ballpark?
If he gives up 10 runs, you have to let him in. Yeah. And nothing you can do. And I say to Michael, you know, this could be over right here. This game could be over right here. And I left an inning later and woke up this morning, and it was over right
fact,
there.
It was over.
Right? What did you think? How much did you? And then there,
I stayed
America,
up late.
Go ahead.
No, I stayed up late. It was a rinse and repeat of, you know, bringing in a new pitcher who's touching 98 to low 100s, swing and miss stuff. And it was very interesting because I'm more of a Schwarber fan after the last 2 days, just for how. Just how praising he is of the game of baseball, of his host city, these fans who came out to support him and Harper.
Yes.
And he was mic'd up for one of his early at-bats, swinging so hard the earpiece just pops out. But you know what? He's game for the interview. He's trying, and then Harper gets mic'd up later. Again, he's just sitting there going, are you guys seeing what I'm seeing? This stuff is nasty.
So 15 strikeouts. This is, look, the National League, we'll talk to Jeff Passan about this. The National League has dominated the American League this year in interleague play.
Very much so, yeah.
Domination, Holmes. and the American League pitchers, one after another, after another, after another, struck out National League batters. They gave up a total of 3 hits, no runs. I don't know how far the furthest runner got. And they struck out 15. And they won 4-0. Ultimately, there was another home run by somebody I was unfamiliar with completely.
There's no doubt about that one.
Yeah. And you just say to yourself, wow. Philadelphia fans, what a miserable 2 days. Your players did squad douche.
Yeah.
They did nothing. Nothing.
Great to see Foster Griffin have a clean inning with, I think, 2 strikeouts. And the question I had for you was, you know, this is an All-Star game where you're putting your best out there. Is that good for the game or bad for the game? If you're trying to just get general interest, it's, you know, 8:40 and the game is over.
It's bad for the game. What's really bad for the game is the amount of National League pitchers who are recognizable who did not pitch.
Not. And was that just sort of where you were with the schedule the last 2 days going
they
in?
They deliberately pitch on a Sunday because they know the rule is if you pitch on Sunday, you cannot pitch in the All-Star game on Tuesday. Rob Manfred concerned about this. We'll ask Passan about this as well. Skeens, Mizorowski, Chris Sale, Yamamoto, Shohei. Didn't pitch.
Yeah, that's
didn't pitch.
It's a different game if those guys are there.
But I don't know that it changes the game because, you know, the National League got no hits. They got 3 hits and no runs.
I'd like to think Shohei might have put one out if he'd been playing, but he's hurt, so yeah.
So anyway, so that's all I got. That's all I got. So we'll get out of here now. Steve Sands will join us. Steve Sands is in Royal Birkdale in England.
Yes.
And he'll join us, and we will talk to him and to Jeff Passan. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is unbelievable what I'm going to tell you. This is a song called I'm Not the One. That's not remarkable. What's remarkable is the people who did it are the Strawberry Alarm Clock. These are the people who had incense and peppermints in the 1960s. This is sent to us by Big Stir Records, and they have an album coming out. It's out August 7th. Where's One? The Strawberry Alarm Clock.
Incense and peppermints?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. This is great. They play in Steve Sands, and this segment with Steve Sands is brought to you by FanDuel. Play your game. I'm going to read something that is going to make you happy. It's not about golf. It says, Dear Tony, thanks for paying tribute to John Riggins, one of the most dominant and colorful running backs of all time. His career 11,352 rushing yards still ranks 20th among the NFL players. That probably understates his true stature, considering the Jets drafted him and used him largely as a blocking back over 5 seasons. He also sat out a season with Washington due to a contract dispute. Riggins is probably best remembered for his performance in a 1983 Super Bowl when he shed the hapless corner Don McNeil near the line of scrimmage and sprinted 43 yards to seal the championship. But I remember an even more breathtaking play when he was a senior at Kansas University In a game against, I believe, Iowa State, he took the ball in the Cyclones 15, exploded through the line, throwing away tacklers like children, lost his helmet, and crossed the goal line on his feet, dragging a couple of tacklers with him. As I recall, the crowd didn't cheer so much as we gasped. We knew right then the guy was headed for the Hall of Fame. This is from Richard Cowden in Beacon, New York. I'm just going to start with you grew up in Washington. Your recollections of Riggins and your thoughts about the fact that he's finally, long overdue, getting number 44 retired.
Well, Tony, one of the great memories I've had ever in my entire life, that first Super Bowl when Riggo converted that 4th-and-1 and the Skins mm-hmm. won for the first time against Miami out of the Rose Bowl. My dad went to the game, I think because of his relationship with the Washington Post, but my dad was at the game and the rest of us, my mom, my grandmother, my aunt, and my brothers and sisters were all watching the game, and we were all on our hands and knees when Joe Gibbs decided to go for it on 4th-and-1. To me, that's the most famous play in the history of not only that franchise, but probably our city of Washington, D.C., as far as professional sports goes. And I was surprised that 44 wasn't retired already.
Me
too. I couldn't believe it when I heard that. I assumed that it was already retired. I mean, John Riggins is an absolute legend in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I mean, I am not someone who grew up in Washington, but I've been here almost 50 years now, and I have some sense of the Washington football team, and I would make the case that he is the number one player ever, and including Sammy Ball and Darryl Green and, you know, and a lot of other people. I would say that Riggins is the number one guy, and I was also surprised. You know, they don't retire a lot of numbers, but they have retired some numbers. I was surprised it took this long. And from what I've read, he had a bad relationship with Dan Snyder, and maybe it was blocked on that executive level. Had you ever heard anything like that?
I mean, I can't believe it. I've never heard in my life that anybody had a bad relationship with Daniel Snyder. That's remarkable. that guy's stench continues to just hover around Washington, D.C. until it just kind of floats away. It's remarkable to me what he did to that franchise for 3 decades, alienating some of the greatest players in the history of the franchise, alienating that incredible fan base. But Riggo, I mean, my gosh, I mean, look, Darryl Green's probably the greatest Redskin of all time, Sammy Baugh, there's a lot of other players, but John Riggins is the most famous, the most beloved.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a beloved, he's a 100 out of 100 when you talk about the Q rating or belovedness. John Riggins is, I mean, my God, he's Washington, D.C. sports royalty for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would, again, I come to it later than you come to it, but I would put Wes Unseld there, I would put Alex Ovechkin there. There are certain players on the Nationals, certain moments on the Nationals, home run moments where you say, well, maybe that guy is there. But Riggo's number one. He's number one.
Absolutely.
All right.
There's any question about it.
Yeah. You're in England. At 8 o'clock tonight, England time, England plays Argentina to get to the finals of the World Cup. Do you have any – now, you're involved in a golf event, but do you have any sense of the frenzy there, or is there no frenzy there?
Oh, Tony, there is a massive frenzy here. They're afraid the country is going to shut down here later today and as it gets closer to 8 p.m. local time. And if they win and they beat Argentina and they play Sunday at 8 p.m., that's right after the Open Championship, there's a little bit of chatter that they might move tee times up here a little bit because they're afraid no one's going to be here beyond 4 or 5 o'clock to make sure they're home or in a pub or wherever they're going to go watch with their family and friends if England is able to try to, you know, win for the first time in 60 years. You think it was a big deal in New York City, Tony, to wait 53 years for the Knicks. This country is on the edge, man. they can't wait for tonight. I can't imagine how jacked up Nigel must be for tonight's game.
Oh, yeah.
Are you still I hope this is true. Please tell me you're still anti-soccer. Please tell me.
I'm sorry?
Please tell me you're still anti-soccer. You still don't love soccer.
Oh, soccer sucks. But the World Cup is a spectacle. It's incredible drama. The pageantry. I love the fans. I love that it brings the world together, all that. But I won't watch another soccer game until at least L.A. and the Olympics in 28, and maybe not even until 2030 if the United States is even in it. Yeah, soccer blows.
Okay, good. That's good. That makes me happy. Let's move to golf. It seems to be a very big deal. Maybe it isn't anymore, but when it happened, a very big deal that Scottie Scheffler missed the cut. at the Scottish Open. He hadn't missed a cut in almost 4 years. In truth, how important is that?
I don't put a lot of importance into it, but I do think it's significant because it's been so long, and Scotty's one of these guys who is grinding on every single shot. He is not one to be at the turn on Friday afternoon, three off the cut line, and just pack it in. And, you know, does it speak to where his game is? Perhaps. Yeah, you got to wait and see what it's like here this week. Is it an anomaly, or is he not playing great? I mean, he came close at the U.S. Open a few weeks ago at Shinnecock. I'm not worried about Scotty's game per se, but I do think it is definitely a footnote for sure that he missed his first cut in almost 4 years.
A lot of people talk about how hard it is to defend the Open Championship, to defend the U.S. Open Championship or the PGA Championship. We should point out this is different than the Masters. The Masters is played at the same place all the time. There are tour stops at the same place all the time. I don't even think it's fair to say defend it because you're at a different track, right? It's different.
Yeah, 100%. You could almost make a case that Jordan Spieth is the pseudo defending champion because he won it here the last time it was played here in 2017. But that's 9 years ago. Jordan Spieth is a completely different person, completely different player. So there really is no true defending champion. I was actually talking to Padraig Harrington yesterday, walking around, ran into Padraig Harrington, who won the second of two in a row here at Birkdale, which is what Scotty's trying to do. He won his first at Carnoustie in 07 when he beat Sergio in the playoff, and then he won here at Birkdale. He was in the final group with Greg Norman. I don't know if you remember that. It was a little incredible drama. And I was asking Padraig about defending at a different place, and he brought up the exact same point you did. It's not apples to apples, and it's not one year to the next. It's from one course to the other. And, you know, last year, Royal Portrush, completely different deal than here at Royal Birkdale. So, yes, Scotty is the official defending champion, but there really truly isn't one.
This course favors what kind of player?
Well, it's really warm, and it's really baked out. This is the first time we're going to see an Open Championship where three irons are going to run 400 yards, you know, like they saw in 2013 at Muirfield, 2006 at Liverpool when Tiger famously never hit a driver. I was talking to Justin Rose about 20 minutes ago during a practice round, and he was saying, you really don't even have to hit driver here at all on any of the 18 holes. The ball rolls out forever here, Tony. So if you're accurate off the tee, if you're like a great iron player, like Colin Morikawa, for instance, who won at Royal St. George's in 2021. He's the best iron player in the world. If you only have to hit irons off the tee here because of the way the ball's rolling out, give me a guy who's a great ball striker, a great iron player, like a Colin Morikawa.
So this is interesting to me because I think golfers in the main, I'm not talking about pros, but those of us who try to play golf are excited when we take out the big driver and see how far we can get with the big driver. Would pros, do you think there will be a lot of pros or a significant amount of pros who will say, you know what, keep it in the bag. I'll take a 3-wood around with me if I need it, but I'm going to hit irons all the time. Are they that much more accurate with irons?
They are that much more accurate with irons, but the difference here is that you don't necessarily have to hit driver when the ball rolls out this way. There are a lot of dog legs. You'll see the next 4 days. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about Royal Birkdale, a lot of interesting things about Royal Birkdale, but one of the things is that it has more dog legs than any other course on the rotation as far as the Open Championship. So driver could punish you here at certain points because you could drive it through fairway because of those dog legs. So I think you're going to see more irons here hit off the tee, more less than driver situations with hybrids and, you know, maybe some 3-woods here and there. But I do not think you're going to see someone go out and hit driver all day long. Even the best driver in the world, you just don't, not only do you not need it here, Tony, this week because it's so dry, so firm and fast that it's almost unnecessary and it's also too punishing perhaps to hit a driver here because it's so dried out.
Even Rory, who hits it, he's the best driver in terms of distance. You think he'll go to irons, Rory?
Well, I think he'll hit less drivers here than anywhere else we see him hit drivers. Now, I don't know exactly what his game plan is going to be, but after walking around this golf course the last 2 days and talking to dozens of players, you almost can't hit driver in certain spots. If you're the best driver of the golf ball in the world, which Rory McIlroy pretty much is, it's not just an accuracy issue, it's a distance issue. And if you are unable to put it in places that are going to make it advantageous for your second chance, then he'll have to dial it back.
Any weather concerns at all in terms of wind and rain, or is it just going to be parched like it is now?
Nah, unfortunately, it's just parched. I mean, the last 2 weeks has been a big heat wave here in Europe. It's about 80, 82 degrees here right now. You know, there's a little bit of a breeze. If the wind can kick up, that would help a lot as far as the scoring. But it's hot. It's sunny. There's not a cloud in the sky. And it's going to be like this pretty much throughout the rest of the week. So unless the wind kicks up, I don't see how these guys don't get lower. They're gonna have some low scores because there's just not a lot of defense of the golf course when you're hitting wedge after wedge after wedge with the best players in the world. But if the wind kicks up, Tony, then you know the scores will get higher. But right now, the wind isn't too much of a factor.
So these courses have been around for 3,000 years. In a situation like this, are we likely to see 20 under win or even more than 20 under win?
Well, it's predicated on the weather. The weather forecast this week, I think you're going to see better scoring. If the wind can just pick up a little bit, I think you'll see higher scores, like I said earlier. But it could be one of those weeks. It could be one of those weeks where guys are in the teens at least under par and maybe close to 20 under par. It doesn't make it a bad Open Championship. It just means it's not going to be one of those, you know, grind it out par type of situations. You know, sometimes when it's 52 degrees here, blowing 25 and raining, you know, the scoring is going to be really high. Place like this, when you have weather like this over the course of 4 days, someone's going to go low for sure.
Okay. You mentioned Morikawa as somebody who stands out on a course like this under these conditions. I would ask about Tommy Fleetwood, who I think grew up right around there and has a great iron game. Is he another one that you think about?
Yes. Oh, for sure. Although there'll be so much pressure on him. Remember when 2019, when he went back to Northern Ireland for the first time in a long time and Rory McIlroy had all that pressure on him at Royal Port Rush.
Yes, he didn't make the cut.
That pressure very well. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Didn't handle that pressure very well at all. It's an overpowering pressure. I just actually spoke to Tommy just before we chatted when we connected on this phone call, and I was talking to him, and he's such a good guy, and he's such a cool cat. It doesn't seem like the pressure is building, but if he's in contention and this entire area is rooting for him, he still lives here. He lives about an hour from here. He knows the area very well. He's very well known in the area because he stayed at home. Not everybody always does that. Some, you know, he's got a place in the U.S., but for the most part, this is where he lives. And, you know, he's one of their own here, and they love that. And it's going to be a lot of heat on Tommy, but he can handle it the way his game is. It's perfectly suited to Royal Birkdale. And I just talked to him, like I said, it's so interesting, Tony. He lives about an hour from here, and obviously he can play here whenever he wants. He's played here twice since 2017, the last time the Open was held here, 9 years ago. He goes, I don't play Birkdale. You know, Birkdale's for, you know, other folks. I don't play Birkdale. So, okay. But he loves the place, and he knows he's going to get a lot of love from the fans, and he's looking forward to that, and he handles that kind of stuff well, but there's going to be a lot of pressure on Tommy to perform this week. All they're talking about here, Tony, is Tommy winning here in his hometown and England playing Sunday night for the World Cup title on the same day. That's what they're desperately wanting right here.
That would be fun. Is Tommy Fleetwood still wearing those pants that don't fit and going into a pro shop and buying a shirt?
I should have told him. I said, I got to go, Tommy. I got to go talk to Tony Kornheiser, and I'm going to send you a Johnny O code. He needs some help with his clothing, man. He's looking for a sponsor. I think he's waiting to win a big one before a sponsorship comes his way.
All right, pick a couple. Besides Morikawa and Fleetwood, give me a couple of others you think might win.
Well, you mentioned Rory. I didn't play great last week in Scotland, but remember how he is the most American European player? Well, in these conditions, I think Rory McIlroy is perfectly suited for these conditions. I think Tommy is. I think Colin Morikawa is. I think, you know, Chris Goderup, who just won a couple of weeks ago, he won the John Deere Classic. He could definitely come here and hit that low stinger. That type of player, a guy who can control his golf ball. So I'll take those four guys.
Okay. Have a wonderful time. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you when you come back. Thanks, Steve.
Tony, you're the best. Take care.
This segment with Steve Sands has been brought to you by FanDuel. Play your game, and we will come back with Jeff Passan. We'll shift from golf to baseball. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
Somebody, someday.
This is a song called Someday. It's by a group called Hale's Corner. And Wesley Cook writes, a friend recently turned me on to the podcast, and I'm really enjoying what you guys do. Just so happens I recently released a song under my project's name, Hale's Corner, after a rather long hiatus. I thought I'd send it along. Again, it is called Someday. And that's Michael, lovely. If independent artists like Hale's Corner want to send their stuff in, how do they do it?
Send us some music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com. And we do have the promo code TKB Day at Johnny Oak. But again, I don't think you can double dip if they have a summer sale as well. Just an FYI.
My grandsons are the best dressed kids in the world because of the Johnny O stuff. I don't get it, but they
better than Scotty Fleetwood, right?
It's just great. All right, plays in Jeff Passan, and I need to read this. Now it's time for the All-Star Recap, sponsored by 5-Hour Energy's Firework Freeze Flavor. Ignite your taste buds with a red, white, and blue Freezer Pop Classic reimagined as a delicious Firework Freeze 5-Hour Energy shot. Find Firework Freeze shots online at www.5hourenergy.com or Amazon today. And plays in Jeff Passan. Are you in Philadelphia, by the way?
I mean, you hear the sirens in the background, so indeed I am.
Okay, that's good. So you were at the game. That's good to know.
I was. Yes, sir.
So I told the story before, you know, at the top of the show, that I'm sitting with my son and a couple of his kids, and it's 3-0 in the top of the first, and I say to Michael, I think this may be it. I think this may be it. And it was it. What did you make of that?
This, to me, Tony, was the most perfect encapsulation of modern baseball in a game played by the best in the world. And it wasn't just the American League throwing 11 pitchers and combining for 15 strikeouts. If you look at what happened after Christopher Sanchez left, the National League also pitched extraordinarily well. They gave up only one more run and they struck out 12 themselves. So half of the 54 outs in the All-Star game yesterday came via strikeout. And when you put together our stuff, and the vast majority of guys knew they were pitching only one inning and could really let it go, it's almost impossible for even the best of modern hitters to hit against modern pitching right now. And that to me says a lot about where baseball is. And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing, but in terms of an entertainment product, yesterday's game wasn't exactly the most exciting.
And the National League did not pitch Skeens or Mizorowski or Chris Sale or Yamamoto. They didn't do that. I guess the most surprising thing to me in the context of the season is the National League has dominated the American League in interleague play and did nothing last night. That surprised me. Surprised you? Or I guess it didn't surprise you because of what you're saying about pitching versus hitting.
Yeah, that's just baseball, man. And here's the thing. The National League is clearly a superior league to the American League. I don't want the All-Star result to skew anything for anybody because, I would be extremely surprised if an American League team wins the World Series this year. And I don't know which team from the National League is going to win. Maybe it's Atlanta. Maybe it's Milwaukee. Maybe it's the Chicago Cubs. I would take all of those teams, plus, of course, the Dodgers, over any of the teams in the American League right now.
But the American League wins the All-Star game, and people remember that. And my other question is there a problem here with teams deliberately pitching their guys on the Sunday before the All-Star game to take advantage of the fact that they are not going to be allowed to pitch on Tuesday. It seems that Rob Manfred has been, you know, has been upset about this. Do you see something in the future, a change of rules here?
I find it hard to say to teams that are playing games that matter, No. You're not allowed to pitch the guy so he can go in an exhibition game. And that's like that. That's always how I look at the All-Star game. The All-Star game, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. The 162 games that are played, they do. They mean something. And you know, when home field advantage in the World Series mattered, and was being determined by the All-Star game, they tried to deliver meaning to it, so to speak. But it always was just an exhibition game. And even though I would argue that it's certainly more competitive than the Pro Bowl or than the NBA All-Star game, you know, NHL does it all right sometimes, but even though MLB's All-Star game is, you know, quote unquote, the most meaningful, it's still at the end of the day, just an exhibition game.
I agree with that, except when I get to the last line for me is it's the only valid All-Star game. So I want to keep it as the only valid All-Star game. It's the best.
Yeah. That's a totally reasonable thing. And I've never been a fan of you started Sunday, you can't throw an inning on Tuesday. I get it. Most guys are throwing bullpen sessions 2 days after their start, not one day. Or off 2 days rest as opposed to 1 day's rest. But I talked to Jacob Mizorowski, who was out with arm fatigue. And I said, are you okay, man? He's like, yeah, I'm fine. All these guys are capable of doing it. And not having those big names in it, I don't think it ruins the All-Star game. I just think it's a little different experience. When you see the All-Star game, it's really nice, Tony, to see the stars. And
yes,
a lot of stars were missing yesterday.
Yes. Yeah, and I think they should do something about that. I think that not the larger headline, because it's a subsidiary headline, but boy, did the Philadelphia fans take a beating 2 days in a row with the home run derby and the All-Star game, right? They got crushed.
I got crushed how?
Because they didn't win in the first night. They had all their hopes on Harper, who didn't make the second round, and Schwarber, who did great but got caught and passed at the end, and their starting pitcher comes out last night, gives up three runs early, and their hitters don't hit. You know, there's a sizable amount of people out there who take the Wilbob position that he hates everything about Philadelphia, and he's gleeful today. He's gleeful. So
I do not hate everything about Philadelphia. Philadelphia, you walk around Philadelphia at night, and in parts of it that I've been to, it reminds me of New York City in the 80s. And I look back, maybe perhaps because I was, in the 80s, I was 1 to 10 years old. I romanticize what New York was like back then. But Philly's got this griminess about it. I know that's a word that has negative context. It's not meant negatively in this situation. I like a little grime in a city. I like a little action in a city. I kind of feel alive knowing that somebody could be walking around the corner with the intent of punching me in the face. Why am I going to get punched in the face? I don't know. Sometimes I've been accused of having a punchable face. I try not to, but if somebody looks at me and they're like, look at that smug, I'd like to punch him. I get it. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, I came out the day of the Home Run Derby, Tony, and went on one of the ESPN morning shows where you're supposed to have interesting opinions. And I said, the Derby's going to stink. And I thought it was going to because of the change.
Oh, it was great.
I know.
It was great.
I understand. Yeah. I felt like a It didn't turn. Like, you know that when within 12 hours of offering an opinion on something, if your opinion has changed entirely and you are being dragged and shamed for that, it's probably a bad opinion.
Yeah, but it's good. It's always good to have an opinion. It's always good to have an opinion. What are your thoughts about the second half of the season? Is there anything that you are highly anticipating, or do you think it's going to be much like the first half of the season and that we have established which are the better teams?
I think this is a second half that has three stories. And the first one is, what does the trade deadline look like? Because of all of the, however you want to phrase it, parity, competitive balance across Major League Baseball this season, I don't know who is going to be selling. I don't know who's going to be dumping some of the best guys out there. And, you know, we know that Luis Arraez, for example, is going to go from San Francisco. We know that Robbie Ray is going to go from San Francisco. But, Tony, even teams like Kansas City, they really don't plan at this point on trading Michael Wacha or Seth Lugo, even though, you know, both would be valuable assets because the Royals want to win next year. And so the notion that even bad teams, and like really bad teams, are not going to sell it, the inventory, I fear, at the deadline this year, because the Boston Red Sox have thrust their way back into playoff competition because the Miami Marlins are a good team and probably are likelier to buy than sell. That is a story that lends into who's going to be in the playoffs in the American League. Right now, the last wild card, Tony, the two teams tied for it, the Seattle Mariners and Minnesota Twins, are under 500. So
under 500,
Yeah, the American League is a complete mess. And then, of course, the mess of all messes, labor.
Like, yeah.
I'm just I don't feel great about where things are right now. I've tried to be optimistic that there is something that can be worked out, but there's a lot of very strong rhetoric at this point from both sides about where this thing is going. And at this point, it is nowhere good.
Plug your podcast for us so everybody knows where they can hear you.
Well, you can see the all-star episode of Sources Tell Jeff Passan on YouTube. You can hear it on all of your favorite podcast platforms. And you can learn things like why Ernie Clement, Buffalo Bills fan, loves going through tables. Paul Skeens's American history lesson, and many, many more. But the Paul Skeens, I haven't actually seen this because we filmed it yesterday. The Paul Skeens segment, I think, is going to turn into like a regular thing on this show. And I almost want to do a completely separate show called American History with Paul Skeens, because we went up to all the players who we were talking with and we didn't come to them with prepared questions. We said to them, what would make you happy to talk about? And they told us, and then we asked questions, and the answers were pretty great.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it sounds
well, I'm happy to think that Paul Skeens has more than just a live right arm. I am. I sort of like him. Thank
Tony,
you, Jeff.
Tony, I'm sorry to continue this on. Paul Skeens is like one of the most interesting and hilarious people in baseball. And
that's good.
Everyone just doesn't realize that he's extremely intelligent. And people don't realize this because he talks in a monotone. Do not let that fool you. Good comedy can come in all sorts of different tones. And Paul Skeens is actually that man.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Tony.
Jeff Passan, boys and girls. That was the All-Star Recap, sponsored by 5-Hour Energy's Firework Freeze Flavor, the iconic red, white, and blue freezer pop flavor you crave with none of the sugar. Spark a tasty flavor sensation with Firework's Firework freeze. It's hard to say this. Firework freeze 5-hour energy shots available online at 5hourenergy.com and Amazon today. And we will come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got emails, faxes, and you knows. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you folks.
Eric DeLong and the Slappy Boys. The Slappy Boys. It makes me so happy. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me say Mars ain't the kind of place to raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as hell. And there's no one here to raise them if you did. And all the science I don't understand. It's just my job 5 days a week. A rocket man. A rocket man. Honky Chateau hit number one on this date in 1972. That's like, what, 54 years ago? First of six straight albums to go to number one for the former Reg Dwight. Thanks to our guests today, Steve Sands and Jeff Passan. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. Got birthday salutations here. Here's one. David Felenius. I'm a 27-year-old high school teacher and baseball coach from Long Island. I sent an email to you this evening for no other reason than to say happy birthday. And I wish you nothing but continued health and success. My mother and I are huge fans of PTI. For the past 15 years or so, we find that 5:30 p.m. window on ESPN and the incredible work that you and Wilbon do, along with the humor and tremendously entertaining and informing banter, to be a bright spot of our day, regardless of the circumstances. Next time, Pablo needs to give you a shout-out during the happy birthday segment at the end of the show. Many blessings to you and wishing you a great rest of the summer and beyond. Go Nats. Jim Neal, Fort Worth, Texas. Shout-out to Mr. Tony. And he says, happy birthday. You got me by 7. Actually, I got you by 8.
Gotta carry the 1.
Yeah. Mark Lynch in Canby, Indiana. Why didn't you call me on your birthday? That's funny. And Jason Bullitt, belated birthday greetings, Dr. Porthauser. This would have arrived yesterday, but you didn't call to remind me it was your birthday. I like when people do that. Okay. From Glenn and Alan and Norwegian Soft Kitten. Our dearest Hot Bagel, for those who may be wondering why we're still awed by the stage presence of the Flowering Potatoes during the Battle of the Point reenactment tour of 1989, nothing before or since our 1991-92 winter tour of colleges and universities when you played bass for us matches our time with you. It wasn't just your virtuosity as a bass player, it was also your impetuous attitude, which led to all kinds of unforgettable shenanigans. Remember that late night in the Waffle House in Pensacola? Pure insanity. To steal from Lakers legend Hot Rod Huntley, you may have been number 33 in our program, Hot Bagel, but you'll always be number one in our hearts. From Brett Hobbs in Linton, Indiana. I will be heading out Friday to my summer job, 3 days on the road. I will give the TK salute to Patrick Sitter as I pass through Sioux Falls. I will be shutting down in Bozeman, Montana before heading into human resources to check for work. I thought I would send you pictures of what our local prisoners sent to the food pantry for distribution. Their potato crop is doing very well. P.S. Thanks to the woman to whom I'm related by marriage for holding down the fort while I'm away on my Yellowstone adventure. And he sends pictures of potatoes. And I can only hope. I mean, look, it's 100 degrees today. And, potatoes can die.
Potatoes can die.
So we don't know. We hope. Here's a haiku for the home run derby from Shad. Philly holds its breath. Coiled snake unleashes power. Wall says, not quite, Kyle. Yeah. Kyle Caldwell in Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada. One of the most exciting home run derbies in recent memory. Good thing it was on network TV, where most people have easy access to watch it, right? P.S. It was on cable in Canada.
Oh.
So it wasn't on Netflix in Canada. No. From Jared Schofer in Exeter, New Hampshire. I think I've come up with a perfect nickname for the Nats manager, Blake Butera. Baby boy Bootsy. Bootsy. That's it. That's the email.
From Baby Brandon. Boy Bootsy was very happy with his oysters last night.
He ordered oysters.
Really?
He's nine.
The flex.
He's nine. And as a starter, as an appetizer, I'd like some
he
oysters.
He stared at you while he did it, too.
It was unbelievable.
Did you get a Chardonnay with that as well?
Unbelievable. He's nine. He's ordering oysters.
Wow.
That kid
was
raised
right. He's a
tortured
soul when it comes to ordering.
That kid was raised right. From Brandon Borzelli in Lebanon, New Jersey. So Jordan Walker had a big comeback to beat Kyle Schwarber in the home run derby by homering on the final six swings. Which Nats bullpen guy did he have pitching to him? From Steve Gilmore in San Angelo, Texas. You mused on how the Nats have the third worst home record on Monday's show. Perhaps it's a potential fear of an angry potato farmer showing up and sitting behind the dugout, decked out in overalls and airing his grievances to everyone from Meatball Michaelis to the baby manager. Or maybe it's Saliza's fault. From Lee Gordon in Boynton Beach, Florida. It was interesting to learn in Monday's mailbag that Cincinnati is about to add a third major concert venue. Just one question, at which one can we expect to hear the piano stylings of Tony B. from Nakama, I omitted a piece of information on the Jim Steinman trivia. He's the only person to have both the number one and number two songs in the charts without being a part of either musical act. And, of course, the Beatles are the exception to everything. Anyhow, I just want to give props to your guy Jim, as I'm a fan of his work. I blame the error on many years of listening to a bald orange man talk incessantly about the Nats, which I don't care about, golf, which I also don't care about, and soccer, which neither one of us cares about. Thanks for the entertainment. You keep my feet light on the mail trail. Patrick Sitter, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Picking up goose feathers brings good luck? No, no, Tony, you've got it wrong. It's picking up goose poop that brings good luck. Give it a try.
Maybe not.
Another matter, the World Cup still blows. So, yeah.
Never forget
Jeff Barger, Hillsborough, North Carolina. Did Taylor Twellman earn shop credit?
We don't know. Top 10. I hope he did.
From Bobby Gottfried. Elita Olshansky is correct about the main inspiration for Animal House being the school that he went to that I can't remember the name of. But I need to stand up here for my alma mater and feel Neil in Rockville would want me as well since he went there too. Elliot failed to mention as co-writer the great Harold Ramis of Ghostbusters, Caddyshack, Stripes, and Groundhog Day fame, who drew his inspirations at ZBT at my alma mater of Washington University in St. Louis. His contributions include hitting golf balls at the ROTC. Go Bears. Wash U, not Chicago. From Barry Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky. Tony, from this point any time forward that someone asks me to do something that I would never do, my response will be, I'm not going to sit on the bacon.
Okay. You know what? That's a good phrase.
And from Scott Napier in Madison, Wisconsin, golf cart breakfast sandwiches are not as cool as pocket pancakes, but the chances of random intestinal issues make them far more exciting. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Today for the podcast, we will be recording about baseball.
We choose a path for history. It all becomes a mystery, like desert sands slipping through your hands. And all your tears and sympathies drop into an endless sea of hopes and dreams, where nothing's what it seems. to make you see that everything's alright. So young, so soon to set you free. My time is short and I must leave and say goodbye. No need to cry. I'm not a shaman or a priest. Love is pure, my heart it bleeds from deep inside.
Dude.